And doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple, it's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse, don't spill it now. I went to the doctor, doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor.
Hello, this is Ken Logan, and you're listening to The Doctor's Inn. And you might be wondering, well, what is The Doctor's Inn? Well, let me tell you what that is. Every month, the third Thursday of the month, from 6 o'clock in the evening to 7, I do The Doctor's Inn. And what I do is discuss subjects that are health or medical related. And usually there are things that I think would be beneficial to you, the listener, to hear, and maybe don't hear in other places. And so one thing about that is that I would like very much to know if you, the listener, had something that you would like me to discuss on this show, The Doctor's Inn. You know, health or medical related. And if you did have something you wanted me to do, look up, study, discuss, etc., on the air, you could let me know that. And my email address is how I'd like you to contact me with that desire or wish. My email address is klogan.md@yahoo.com. And K as in the letter K. And Logan is L-O-G-A-N, K-Logan, M-D, @yahoo.com. You need to know that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by you, the listeners, with your generous contributions to KZFR, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsoftheart.net. And by Drunken Dumpling in Chico, serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Tuesday through Thursday, and from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Friday and Saturday. Details are present on Facebook, Instagram, and at drunkendumplingchico.com. Drunk and drunken is D-R-U-N-K-E-N. Drunken Dumpling, where they love food, flavor, and our community. Thank you to the underwriters and to you, the contributors, you, the listeners who contribute to this station, KZFR. Today's show, The Doctor's Inn, is really going to be some discussions. And I'm going to start out with talking about something that came up a few weeks ago, and it all started at the in Chico. We have a free clinic called the Shalom Free Clinic. It's on Sunday afternoons. It's not affiliated with any other organization. It's a totally simply a grassroots community members volunteering to help members of the community who are in need of medical care and cannot afford to obtain it elsewhere because they either do not have health insurance, they're in economic straits and without health insurance and cannot afford health care elsewhere, or some of the people who come in have health insurance but they cannot afford their deductible or copays. And then occasionally we see patients there, people there who have healthcare insurance but have not been able to link up or have trouble linking when they need it with healthcare providers. So we see a variety of patient types. There's no appointment necessary. It's 1 to 4 in the afternoon, 1010 Mangrove, Suite D, Sunday afternoons, 1 to 4. The people in the community that essentially are present to help us run that clinic have always been students from Chico State. And for those of you listening from outside this area, that's California State University, Chico. And these students are mostly healthcare professional of some sort, either pre-medical school or nursing, or some of them are interns in public health internships and psychology internships, variety of students. Well, there was one student who was working to become a physician, and he has since graduated from Chico State, and he's moved on and has entered into a graduate program. Not into medical school yet, but a different graduate program at Yale in, you know, New Haven, Connecticut. And apparently he's taken note of a journal, and I think it's an online journal, and it's called the Journal of Medicine and Biology at Yale. And anyway, the reason I'm bringing this journal up is he asked me to write an article on humanism or humanitarian side of medicine. And the reason he did is because something he talked to me about before he left to go to Yale was that, and again, remember, this is a young man, bright young man, quite accomplished, and his goal is to be a physician, function as a physician. He was disappointed in some elements of care that his parents had received over the years, lacking compassion. The healthcare people in healthcare sometimes lacking compassion to his parents. His parents are a bit unique in that they do not have the ability to hear, and they are also, apparently, I believe, have limited speech ability, and therefore they communicate in signing, and he communicates with them in that fashion as well. So it has been bothering him that the lack of compassion sometimes, and it's compassion is something we speak about at the Shalom Free Clinic, and we speak about it with the students as well. However, thinking of that term humanitarianism or humanism of medicine, a little different term. Anyway, he asked me to write that article, so I did, about my perspective, from my point of view, relative to humanitarian or humanism in medicine, in the medical world, another function of the medical world. So I thought, okay. Anyway, I wrote the article, and I'm going to read it to you, because I think it's something that it's worth all of us thinking, hearing and thinking about. I wrote it last month, December. Here it is. I was asked to write a narrative on the humanitarian side of medicine. First of all, I feel honored to be asked to do so. Yes, me as a human, I have feelings such as honor. I also, of course, have many other feelings, and I also have many other ideas, expectations, and aspirations. That is, I'm an individual human being. So, on the humanitarian side of medicine, if I'm asked to speak to that, would I, in doing so, be agreeing that there even is a humanitarian side of medicine? That is, that side of medicine actually exists. And would I then be acknowledging that there is also another side of medicine, a side different than the humanitarian side of medicine? And if so, what would that other side of medicine be? Something, I hope we can all think about this. So, I find it somewhat unfortunate that there is even room for the option of there being a side of medicine that is not humanitarian. There is no defensible reason, in my mind, that any subject relating to medicine should exist without the absolute presence of humanism. Even the place given to things like the computers we use in medicine is created by, given by, and for the benefit of human beings. Therefore, we have to never lose, for a variety of reasons, the human perspective. The human perspective in all facets when it comes to the practice of medicine. In other words, the practice of healthcare. For example, when we're talking about me, well, I am a specific individual, unique human being. Let's take me as an example. My life has included being the son of two elderly parents who have since passed, however. And I am a father. I am a grandfather. I, in my past, have been a hospital corpsman in the Navy and a licensed vocational nurse. And I'm a family physician now and have been for many years, 40 years. These being actually only small pieces of the life of the human being that is me. Therefore, how could anyone really know me, after simply a fairly brief interaction, such as after only a fairly brief interaction in a physician's office, for instance? Dealing with the health issues in my life, in all its aspects, is, of course, unique to me. The me that is me is different. The me is unique. Therefore, how could a physician adequately know how to assist me as an individual human being with a health issue, if they did not take the time to attempt to know me, take the time to attempt to get a feel for the uniqueness of me? This is where the basic functions of being a human being come into play for a physician, for the function of a physician. That is, the basic functions of listening, the basic function of caring about another human being, the basic function of attempting to sense feelings that may be present, and possibly the depth of those feelings that may be present. As a physician, when sitting with another person, we have before us a human being made up of all the multitude of facets that make that individual who they are as an individual. Those facets are all of importance when it comes to approaching that person's care. How can a physician adequately fulfill their contract or responsibility relative to helping that patient without doing their best to develop that overall picture relative to who that specific patient is? This overall picture being created by the artist who is the physician, and the physician functioning within the realm of what some people call the art of medicine. In reality, it's a human being, the physician, interacting with another human being, the patient. Therefore, functioning within a humanitarian realm, whether we call the actual practice of medicine. That's the practice of medicine. At least that's the way it should be, of course. Therefore, the humanitarian side of medicine is not a side at all, but rather it is the whole of medicine in its entirety. We physicians need to remember that. We need to function within that realm of wholeness. That is, if our goal is to function at our best as physicians. And we need to also teach this to our students. We need to teach this to our patients. And we need to teach this to ourselves. And in our that is, in our own lives as human beings. Medicine is humanism. Thank you for listening to that and thinking about that. I hope thinking about that. All right. Okay, now I'm moving on to a whole different subject. And this is me doing my due diligence. My due diligence part of this show, the doctor's in, relative to discussing COVID, the COVID virus, which, of course, you've all heard about. Okay. As I suspect we all realize by now, COVID's here to stay in the world, in our community, and in our lives. Remember, we have many, many viruses that are essentially never going away. And COVID now is one of those. it's one of many viruses that's here to stay. So it's up to us humans, however, to pay attention to what is best in our lives relative to living with various viruses. And now, that includes COVID. What do I mean by what is the best in our lives, doing our best in our lives relative to living with various viruses? Well, let's think about that. We humans have had to do our best in dealing with other viruses in the world for several years, decades, centuries, such as smallpox, HIV, such as polio, such as influenza, respiratory syncytial virus, common cold. Right? History tells us about how this has come about relative to how we've dealt and lived with other viruses over the past, again, several years, decades, centuries, depending on which we're talking about, which virus we're talking about. So relative to the COVID virus, it's new to us. It's new in our world. The details of what it can do to us and what the consequences of it can be into the future are still being learned, are still in a state of flux. However, that knowledge is in a state of flux, I say. You know, we don't yet know fully. How we as a species respond to what it does to us as humans, as communities, and as a country, and economy, and public health, and the world, it's all a changing phenomenon still, of course. And will be. We have to adjust to that. As part of this particular monthly radio show, The Doctor's In, here's what I want to say about COVID as of today. And of course, this is from my viewpoint. First of all, relative to the local impact of COVID here in Chico, and specifically, I'm talking mainly the marker I have on that is some information from Inlo Hospital as of at least the first of the month, February, about 2 weeks ago. So there hasn't really been any major change in relative to the number of people with COVID in our hospital over the last several weeks. That means that the number of people with COVID that are hospitalized here in Chico is remaining fairly low. That is generally less than around five people in the hospital with COVID at any one point of time, with ups and downs in that number, of course. As far as deaths go in our area from COVID, I don't have any specific information on that. However, I suspect that it is periodically that there's a periodic death, but it's not a major phenomenon here in our community and in our country. The world, I'm not sure. It depends on what variants are present in different areas of the world. I really haven't kept up in that. That is, COVID still is causing some deaths on an ongoing basis, although much lessened over the last few to several months. However, the thing that, of course, we're all starting to look at and talk about and feel and all that is the long-term consequences of COVID on us human beings. And that's now in the process, of course, of being watched and sorted out one step at a time as the months and years go by now. And one of those consequences has to do with the COVID's effect on human beings, on the heart of human beings, which I'm going to talk about a little bit in a minute. But first of all, there's two things I want to say again relative to the advice for us humans relative to doing our best to help ourselves with COVID at this time. You've heard this before from me if you've happened to listen to this show in the past and you've heard it from other people. So what are the things that we should remain vigilant about to help ourselves relative to this COVID virus? First, get vaccinated. And currently, I specifically mean get the current booster shot. And current, as in the shot that the booster shot that's been out since, I believe, September of 2022. And it's called a bivalent COVID vaccination. And by booster, the word booster, all that means is the timing of when you get the shot. In other words, you've already had some of the vaccine, or you've had the virus itself as an infection. And so this booster, all it means is the vaccination is its job is to boost up your immunity at that time. Anyway, the bivalent word of this particular shot or of COVID shot, which you could call a booster. The bivalent means that it has now includes antigens to help you make antibodies against the Omicron variant and or variants of the COVID virus that are present currently. So, so it has the antigens from the past variants of COVID, and it now has the Omicron antigens present. So that's what's different about this bivalent booster that's now available. So why? One of the reasons I bring that point up, that it's important to obtain this, I feel, for those who are eligible, and I'll get into what eligible means in a minute. And here's why I'm bringing this up. One of the reasons I'm bringing this up now. If we look at Butte County, should we be proud of ourselves in Butte County relative to how well the eligible have obtained this newest bivalent vaccine to help us decrease the impact of COVID in our community? No, we cannot be proud, because we're at 21% only of those eligible in our Butte County. 21% of those eligible to get the vaccine, this bivalent vaccine, have obtained it. I personally think that's not wise. I was going to use another term, but I feel it's not wise, and I favor those eligible to indeed obtain the bivalent COVID booster vaccination. So, you know, why are we in only at 21% of the eligible obtaining this? You know, why is that? You know, I sit back and I look. You know, what are we doing? We're kind of throwing up our hands and saying, "I don't want this anymore. I'm tired of this COVID. I want to ignore it. I have other things on my mind. Like, I want to, I have other things to think about. I need to think about conspiracy theories. I have to put my mind to that and stuff like that." So, It sounds to me like there's a bit of frustration in the community, in the world, and certainly in our country relative to COVID. Duh. Is that a big duh on that one, huh? Yeah, we're frustrated about it. However, my advice is for us to understand ourselves relative to our frustrations. And, you know, remember, things like frustration and even denial are not uncommon. That's part of being a human being, you know? I do then advise us all, encourage us all, to look at ourselves as individuals, our individual self. And I encourage us all to understand ourselves, understand our frustration, and then maybe we can work on moving beyond that in ourselves, and not be in the out of sight, out of mind, you know, denial place. But understand that frustration is a normal response, and understand that, and then that maybe can help you move beyond that. Okay, so it's, of course, like I've said, it's my opinion that all of us who are eligible for at least the COVID booster bivalent shot to indeed get it. It's a broader coverage. It's now available, and bivalent vaccine, which I already talked about what it is. So who's eligible for that? What's that mean? To my knowledge, those of us who are 50 years of age or older, or even younger than 50, if you have some long-term health conditions, such as significant problems that involve your lungs, your heart, your kidneys, or you have diabetes, or you are a person with an organ transplant, or you're someone with immune system issues, conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, psoriasis, especially for those immune system conditions, if you're taking a immune system modulating product from your doctor, your rheumatologist or your dermatologist. So then now, on to another issue relative to a subject that I want to cover about COVID, and that is this pill for treating a person when and if they get COVID. It's called Paxlovid, P-A-X-L-O-V-I-D, Paxlovid. I personally, as a physician, do not have specific experience with that medicine's use. However, I'm told that is best to be used for people who are at high risk of having severe in a case of COVID. That is, not for everybody who gets COVID, but if you are at risk for having a severe case, such as those people with that are older, such as 50 years of age or older, and those medical conditions that I mentioned a few minutes ago, who are younger than 50 or 60. And then what would Paxlovid do? Well, it potentially can help decrease the severity. Potentially, it can decrease the severity of the infection. Will it absolutely decrease the severity of the infection? No. Do we know exactly how well it will work in decreasing the severity of the infection? No. So as you can imagine, see what I'm saying, it's somewhat vague, isn't it? I wish it was sharper than that, the knowledge and what we have to offer. But to my knowledge, I'm giving you what I know. And here is something. And speaking about what I know, listen to this. So if you're expecting some kind of solid advice specifically from me, a doctor, relative to the use of Paxlovid, here's my opinion. Listen to this. Here's my opinion of its use. I don't know. Okay. Now, about COVID infection and the person's heart. I think it's important for all of us to try to understand that when we human beings get infected with COVID, much of the consequences that we have relative to that infection have to do with our body's immune system's response to the infection. And more specifically, the consequences of those responses it's in the realm of inflammation or irritation. And there are immune system cells in our body that play a role in this. There are immune system chemicals that are made by some of those cells in our body that play a role in this. But the consequence is in some people, well, in most people, but to varying degrees of severity, inflammation in certain tissues. And it turns out that certain tissues that can have consequences of inflammation relative to COVID, not only in the acute stage of COVID, but long-term down the line, are the tissues of the lungs, the brain, and the heart. And it's not a new fact, by the way. We've known it from the beginning that COVID tends to have a propensity for inflaming those tissues. That's the way it's always been. But now we're beginning to be able to see long-term issues in those inflammation in certain tissues of the body. Relative to the heart, we call the inflammation of the heart, it's mainly the main part of the heart that is inflamed, not the only, but the main part of the heart is the muscle of the heart, or myocarditis, or inflammation of the muscle of the heart. Well, the main thing of the heart is muscle, right? It's a muscle pump blood all the time around our body, every second of our life. So myocarditis means that the heart muscle, the myo or muscle, is itised. Itis means irritated, inflamed, unhappy. Therefore, sometimes people who get COVID can have myocarditis, and their heart's muscle, the pump, can be less than adequate relative to its strength of pumping. We call that a cardiomyopathy, which just means muscle ain't working good. All right. There are some other heart-related issues that can come up too, such as irregularities, you know, where scarring tissue from inflammation in the heart can lead to some, apparently, irregular heartbeats occurring, palpitations and irregular heartbeats. And even in some cases, some inflammations of the heart arteries that lead to some flow problems, heart attackiness, which could lead to chest pain, angina, and maybe heart attack. So my point there is that we all need to pay attention down the line relative to symptoms that we may get, relative to chest pain, difficulty with shortness of breath, with activity that when we didn't used to be like that. These are, if you have chest symptoms such as that, discomfort or breathing or any questions of that, see your doctor. Ask your doctor about those things. I'm not bringing these things up about the heart to scare anybody, okay? It's just information, and I just want us to, I just don't like to scare people, of course, but I just want us to realize that there are potential for this COVID virus to affect other parts of our body, such as the heart, brain, lungs. And so it's not exactly always only this cold-like upper respiratory thing. So, again, like I've said before, what do we want to do? Okay, you want to try to prevent your likelihood of getting COVID infections? That's what I'd advise. And what's that? What are some of the things to keep in mind for that?
It's still the same.
Vaccinate. Vaccination. I already talked about that bivalent COVID. In other words, the more improved vaccination for COVID, booster, we call it. But it just means boosting your immunity. It's available. And then masking if you're around a bunch of other people. masking when appropriate, in other words, and avoiding crowds of people. It's still the case, in my opinion. You know, if you're going to meet with a bunch of people, well, meeting outside is better than meeting inside. And then just the usual wiseness of health stuff is advised for all of us, for whether we're trying to help ourselves if we ever get sick from COVID or any other virus or a variety of other things. And that is to do things such as eating wisely on a regular basis, wisely eating, and resting adequately, not forgetting that. And being active, that is body activity of some sort that is gentle enough to for you, or just the regularness of it is important. Don't overdo, but just some regularness of body activity. And again, relaxation and a balance thereof of body activity throughout your days and relaxation throughout your days and eating wisely throughout your days. There you go. That's my opinion. Okay, so now I'm not going to talk about COVID anymore today. What I am going to talk about right now and discuss is I'm going to title this part of this show the same title of an article that I just read, and I'm going to tell you about this article. It's not new information, but I like how it's worded. And here it is. Pervasive greed destroying U.S. healthcare. I'm going to say it again. Pervasive greed destroying U.S. healthcare. And that is a title of a recent publication of something called the Health Justice Monitor. Health Justice Monitor. And this was a January 31st, 2023 publication of that, Health Justice Monitor. And that's a regularly published critique of various aspects of our healthcare system here in the U.S. I happen to get it emailed to me on a regular basis, which you too could receive via email if you wanted to. And it's via, there's a couple physicians who do this thing called the Health Justice Monitor. The email address is, it's really complicated. No, it isn't. It's an easy email. It's healthjusticemonitor@gmail.com. healthjusticemonitor@gmail.com. If you want to get on it regularly, you could ask them. If not, you could Google. I mean, if you have trouble that way, you could Google it, Health Justice Monitor, and see if there's a way to off their website of getting regularly, of you being able to regularly see that publication. Anyway, this title of this one, Pervasive Greed Destroying U.S. Healthcare, in my opinion, that title is actually an understatement about the greed being responsible in a big way, partly responsible, but in a big way, for the destruction for years now in our healthcare system. And greed is the key word here. When you put the words greed, healthcare, and the United States together in one sentence, I say that statement alone, those words together, sum up the fundamental core or cause or etiology, as we doctors would say, of our healthcare problems in our country. Not only the cost, the enormous cost, but also the lack of healthcare availability for millions, actually, in our country. Greed. Well, then one could ask, what does this element of problems with the healthcare system seem to? Why does it only seem to be happening only in the United States? This greed thing that's screwing us up relative to healthcare. Why is it only in the United States? In other words, the mega amount of money being spent overall in our healthcare in our country is bizarrely mega compared to other countries. Yet there's so many gaps compared to other countries in our healthcare in our country. Wow. holes in the system, but mega cost. And it's not occurring in the same way in other industrialized countries. And the answer to why, this is my opinion, and I'm going to speak a little bit about this here, is capitalism. But not just capitalism, it's capitalism gone astray. And it's a poorly regulated capitalism. In other words, greed in our country, in our capitalistic system, in our country, unique to us, greed itself is sacrosanct here in the U.S. We just expect it, allow it. It's deeply embedded, an integral part of our the U.S. society, not just the only healthcare. End of story. It's just us. It's been embedded and it's been happening for the last 60 years or more. The rich get richer, the poor stay poor. The rich carry to power through various facets of our life and into various multiple facets of our politics, our governance even. We, the masses, are blinded to this reality, being blinded to this reality in any practical way anyway, because of how deep this greed is, and it's just a given, and it's just the way it is, and it's fine, apparently felt to be fine. It's embedded, but because stays that way, the sustainability of those in power and to remain in power is dependent upon facets of the system that keeps the spread in wealth between the rich and the rest of us as wide as possible, and as we all know, getting wider and wider and wider. Greed is to therefore remain in full force, ongoing, rising, without any changes to the contrary. Greed begetting greed. It's the American way. One of the places that I personally, specifically witnessed this American process is in, as I've said earlier, the free clinic here in Chico, where we see, because of that greedy system and the consequences thereof, of capitalism and the greed-oriented healthcare system in our country, we see and help as best we can, but it's just like a Band-Aid, the left out, the neglected in our system, our society, our community. Now I'm going to read you that article that I said I was giving you the title of. Hang on a minute. I got to get this computer back. Try to get this. Okay. So the title of this article is called "The Pervasive Greed Is Pervasive Greed Destroying U.S. Healthcare," and it's in Health Justice Monitor, January 31st, 2023. It's written by a man named Donald Berwick. I'm not exactly sure he's a physician, but I think he is. And then a commentary by a physician named Don McCann, who's been to Chico before to talk. And it starts out, the summary. Esteemed medical care quality leader Donald Berwick condemns the pervasive and crippling role of financial gain-seeking in U.S. healthcare. As he said, a single-payer system, however, is the solution. The grip of financial self-interest in U.S. healthcare is becoming a stranglehold with dangerous, pervasive consequences. No sector of U.S. healthcare is immune from this immoderate pursuit of profit. Neither drug companies, nor insurers, nor hospitals, nor investors, nor physician practices are immune to this. It's part of it. It's just embedded, and it's currently mushrooming as we speak. Rapidly increasing pharmaceutical costs are now familiar to the public. Eye-popping prices for new essential biological and biosimilar drugs, enabled by the failure of any serious drug price regulation in our country, have yielded enormous profits for drug companies, even though Much of the basic biological research funding has come from your tax dollars in via government sources. Particularly costly has been profiteering among insurance companies participating in this. This is a big deal. Listen to this for yourself or for anybody in your family who is on Medicare. And that is the disgusting profiteering among insurance companies participating because our government let them do it. Our Congress enacted this years ago, allowing this. Oh, I was going to use a word that I shouldn't use on the air. And it's called, anyway, participating in this thing called the Medicare Advantage Program. Medicare Advantage. And they, those insurance companies are gaming the Medicare risk codes and the ways it, comparative benchmarks are set to expected costs. And Medicare Advantage, which are private, run by private health insurances companies, plans have become by far the most profitable branches of large insurance companies. On your tax dollar and my tax dollar and the patients, individual patients' premiums and other copays, gigantic profits. According to some healthcare research, Medicare Advantage programs will cost Medicare over the next 8 years, over $600 billion, more than it would have if the case had remained the same with a traditional Medicare without Medicare Advantage. And it's Medicare Advantage for the insurance companies is what it's for. That's who gets the advantage. Profit. Hospital pricing games are also widespread, they say. Hospital claims, large operating losses, and these are mainly corporate-owned large system big system hospitals. Large systems sit on balance sheets with tens of billions of dollars in the bank or invested. Hospital prices for the top 37 infused cancer drugs, by the way, are 86% higher when you get them in the hospital relative compared to if you got them in a say an oncologist's office. Recent New York Times investigations have reported on nonprofit hospitals reducing and closing services in poor areas while opening new ones in wealthy suburbs and on their use of a collection agency in pursuing patient payments from patients with low income, you know. Windfall profits also appear in the salaries and benefits for many healthcare executives, they say. And I'm reading this article in the Health Justice Monitor, and the article is called Pervasive Greed Destroying U.S. Healthcare. And he goes on to say, avarice is manifest in mergers leading to market concentration, which, despite this thing of calling it economies of scale, almost always instead raises costs. That is what is happening as hospital consolidations proceed largely unchecked in many urban markets as physician practices are purchased by for-profit firms. Mergers, acquisitions, and public offerings have been to stockholders, in other words, have been occurring throughout the healthcare system without in ways that, if you look at it relative to how it helps the healthcare system, it's not logical relative to the helping actually of the healthcare system. Profit may have its place in motivating innovation and higher quality in healthcare as in any industry. However, kleptocapitalistic or greed behaviors that raise prices, salaries, and the market power that comes along with that, the government payment to extreme levels to really hurts patients and families. Vulnerable institution, government programs, small and large business in the workforce morale. It's bad on all those things. Those behaviors, mostly legal, but nonetheless wrong, have now accumulated to a level that poses an existential threat to even the sustainability and equitableness and compassionateness of our healthcare system. What to do about greed? No answer is easy, not least because of the political lobbying that individuals and organizations are for for-profit health, pharmaceutical industry and health insurance industry does in Congress. The cycle is vicious. Unchecked greed concentrates wealth. Wealth concentrates political power, and political power blocks constraints on the greed. Healthcare professionals in all disciplines need to become noisier and a voice, put out voice about the conflict between unchecked greed and how it gets in the way of our duty to heal. Wow. And here's the comments by Dr. McCann, Don McCann. Considering that we have by far the most expensive healthcare system in all the world, yet one of the mediocre, one healthcare system with mediocre outcomes by international standards, and one that shamefully leaves so many without coverage, you know, those people that I see at the Shalom Free Clinic, and a great many more with unacceptable exposure to financial hardship, in other words, bankruptcies. Most leading cause of personal bankruptcies is healthcare costs. So we should certainly take a serious look at the role of greed in producing this despicable performance. If we would simply eliminate the impact of greed and apply the proceeds to the operation of well-crafted, universal, equitable healthcare financing system, in other words, a single-payer healthcare system, we would have the system that would be the envy of all nations, not the embarrassment of ourselves that we have, I say. What an idea! Having so much good come out of the elimination of an evil such as greed and the capitalism gone awry relative to at least our healthcare system. How could anyone not join that bandwagon except maybe for those who are the greedy? In other words, the multi-billion billion-dollar industries that are so powerful in this country, health insurance, pharmaceutical industries, etc. I think lobbying in Congress needs to be outlawed somehow, needs to get regulated somehow. It just irks me. It's not the common folk of the country. The common people of the country aren't the people who are lobbying, sitting in there taking the Congress people out to lunch or whatever they're doing. And getting the words with the Congress people. No, it's the moneyed for-profit industries that are strangling us, the people. Those are who are the lobbyists buttering up our politicians. That should be illegal. Single-payer healthcare is the way to make this happen. The best we can do to help this problem is for we the people, hopefully via our congressional representatives in the House and the Senate, to initiate and enact a single-payer healthcare system here in the United States. Therefore, a healthcare system without the capitalistic greed that it currently has that's destroying it, and with the appropriate healthcare being available for all of us. Single-payer system. Wow. Thanks for listening. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by D.A. Lampe, L-A-M-P-E, that is, D.A. Lampe Construction, a proud supporter of KZFR and community radio in Northern California. For more information, visit DALampeConstruction.com, and by Mountain Sports for over 45 years providing outdoor clothing and equipment for hiking, backpacking, camping, traveling, and enjoying the great outdoors. Mountain Sports open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. till 5:30 p.m. and on Sunday from 11 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. And that is at 176 East 3rd Street in downtown Chico. I think you already know this, but I'm going to tell you this again because I'm supposed to. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. What you just heard were the opinions of this doctor of 40 years, Ken Logan. That's me. I want to put a thank you to Mark Baker down here at the studio for being available and helping me when I'm in a pinch. And I want to tell you that stay tuned for Planetary Radio. And I'm going to try in a minute to play a song for you. What do you think about that? Let's do that. Let's see if I can play the Rolling Stones, Dear Doctor. See if I can do that.
Oh, help me, please.
Dear Doctor,
doctor,
take one, right?
I'm damaged.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2.
Oh, help me, please, Doctor. I'm damaged. There's a pain where there once was a heart. It's sleeping, it's beating. Can't you please take it out and preserve it right there in that jar? Oh, help me, please, Mama, I'm sickening. It's today, that's the day I'm to plunge. Oh, the gal I'm to marry is a bow-legged sow. I've been soaking up drink like a sponge. Don't you worry, get dressed, cry my mother. As you fly me with bourbon so sour, pour your socks up, put your suit on, comb your head down, but you will be wet in the hour. Oh, help me, please, doctor, I'm a damage. There's a pain where there once was a heart. I'm sleeping, it's a beating. Now under control.
searching for extraterrestrial technosignatures among the stars. This week on Planetary Radio.